This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Demon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Hi, Souther.
Hey, buddy.
What's up, man?
Not too much. Yeah, kind of nothing.
Great show so far.
The weather, the weather got me a little freaked out.
It's 70 degrees right now in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah.
I mean, are we happy about that?
I am.
What's your problem?
I just feel like we've broken the weather, Dave.
We did that a long time ago.
Yeah,
there's no turning back.
I totally agree with that. I guess I didn't really notice the impact. Until recently.
I love it.
Especially today when I woke up and it was 70 degrees.
More tanks in Bushwick. That's the impact.
Yep.
More tanks. All right.
I love it. I mean, as one who rides motorcycles often, I really dig it. But it also means that this summer is probably going to be like 130 degrees every day.
Right. And that's maybe what I'm not looking forward to. How's your week been? Mine's been busy.
Yeah, same. Busy. Super busy.
Yeah.
Had my friend Amanda Womack in town.
Oh, yeah.
She lives in San Francisco. She represents one of your favorite brands, Jägermeister.
That's right.
And, she was in town visiting, doing some work stuff with our buddy Willie Shine, who was on the show about a month ago, talking about Jäger. And, just a blast. She and I worked together back in the day at Linnell's down in Red Hook, the infamous Linnell's LTD, and she's been out there for a while, and good to catch up. What about you? What's been busy?
Mainly just, the grind.
Writing your book on your phone?
Indeed, there's that, yeah. Well, that's actually kind of a big part of it, and then the second part, of course, is just the grind that is running the bar, and it's just been a busy time. I think it's this kind of like unexpected spring-like weather.
Yeah, we've been slammed.
Makes people thirsty.
It was like a holiday weekend too. I mean,
oh, that's right. Yeah, it was President's Day. I kind of forgot about that because we got crushed.
Because what is President's Day?
I don't know, but it's a day people like to drink, apparently.
Yep.
Especially with the current president.
Yeah, seriously.
Past President's Day.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Let's
is that what it is? Past let's President's it. Day.
Past President's Day.
I see.
Anyway.
well, speaking of San Francisco, our guest today is here all the way from San Francisco. We got in the studio with us Maggie Hoffman, author of One Bottle Cocktails. Which we have a copy of in our hands right now. Welcome to the studio.
Yeah.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Great to have you. So, actually, you lived in New York before.
Yeah.
And then you moved out to San Francisco, what, like 5 or 6 years ago or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Cool.
Well, whatever made you leave New York City?
Well, I kept my job, so that made it easier to leave.
Oh, nice.
I was at Serious Eats, which was based in New York, and I just kept it and moved west to the sun and permanent springtime. Had a child, and now I stay home.
Awesome.
No, now I write cocktail books.
yeah.
And this one is coming out real soon.
Yeah, what's the
not out yet.
No, it's not even out yet.
Oh,
we're lucky. We're always, hey, you know, we're ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
Yeah, the One Bottle Cocktail comes out March 6th.
The One Bottle Cocktail is the name
it's
of the book.
It's going to be a thing, the One Bottle Cocktail.
I love it. Like simplicity.
Category.
It's like, I always think of that when I'm going camping.
You just quoted it.
It's like, what can I make with one bottle?
Precisely. Or if you're like on vacation somewhere that has a crappy liquor store and there's a decent grocery store, but you know, they don't. You're not going to find good vermouth in Hawaii or wherever.
Right.
You're not going to find good vermouth in Hawaii. Sorry, Hawaii. Yeah.
So this book doesn't have any vermouth and doesn't have any bitters.
They got all the pineapple.
Oh, wow.
Single spirits.
I was wondering about that when we were talking about having you on the show. I was wondering if that meant, because I was immediately thought of the 12 bottle bar book.
Sure.
Which is cool. It's like a really cool book, actually, and it's like set up for like a home bar. This is set up for like an occasion almost, sure. You know, like these are for these, like I'm flipping through the pages and they're all like kind of occasional, lots of like kind of like punchy vibes, mm-hmm. but there's no vermouth, no bitters. I mean, it's literally one bottle.
And the truth is a 12 bottle bar would actually cost you some money to put together. And my philosophy is sort of like start with a drink you like.
Yeah.
And in this situation, like you can start with $30 in a good gin or whatever, instead of laying out. I don't think people should like have a whole bar cart full of things they don't drink. That's silly.
Right. I think they should, but that's...
I mean, I'm on the fence. Like, there are people who shouldn't, there are people who shouldn't, right? Those who shouldn't, frankly, are us city dwellers. I'm not hosting it in my house very often.
Yeah.
But if I had a house in the middle of Des Moines, Iowa, I'd probably have a nice-sized bar in my house.
I mean,
came over, I could roll it out.
I have hundreds of bottles of booze in my house. But still, thing that was happening to me was that all these cocktail books come out, and they're often bar books. There was a moment, especially a couple of years ago, where there were all these bars who were having their book and sharing their recipes. If you love that bar, that's fun to read. But even with 100, like the wall of booze in my house, I would find that I couldn't make the drinks because I didn't have precisely the Amaro they were talking about.
Or you didn't have Bitten's ham-infused whiskey or popcorn-infused.
Or the bitters.
I love BDT, but that book is amazing.
I think
it's more of an inspiration.
Exactly. I think of those books as like, you know, I went to the museum and I saw the Magritte exhibit, and on the way out in the gift shop, I bought the Magritte book. I did not, in fact, go home and try and paint a Magritte.
You're so right. Yeah, you're so
like,
right.
And I put it in the same category as like, oh yeah, man, I have read and will continue to reread chapters from, you know, Tom Keller's French Laundry book. Oh, that sounds delightful.
Drinking cider because it's spring.
Why not? But we're going to drink something springy in a minute, too.
Yeah, too.
But I don't try and cook Tom Keller's food at home.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like...
It inspires me, though. I look at those pages. The photos are beautiful. The recipe sounds amazing.
It's like more of a suggestive like thing. Like, oh, well, what can I do? You know, the thing is with a lot of, like... specialized cocktail books from bars and their special ingredients. It's like once you do like a certain infusion, you kind of want them to have like whenever you'd get a box of Legos when you were a kid, and then you would have the thing, and you could make a car with all the pieces, and then you like open up the thing, and it gives you suggestions on other things that you can make with the same Legos,
right? Same amount, same shapes, and all that.
Yeah, it's like. You kind of want that from, if you're going to throw in, like, all right, you've got this crazy, like, ghost pepper-infused tequila, you know, it's like, I mean, obviously that's kind of easy to use in a bunch of different applications because everyone likes spicy tequila drinks, but kind of want to be like, you know what, show me, like, five things I can do with this one thing instead of just, like, the one thing.
Sure.
And then I got a...
Plug and play.
A weird thing sitting around on my bar.
So, well, there's actually a chunk in the book that alludes to that, too. But let's not put the cart before the horse.
Okay, yeah, sorry.
Let's back up a little and say, so you left New York City 5 years ago. You were working for Serious Eats. What were you doing for them? And how did you get into this field in general? You started as a writer. You started as a drinker.
You
were a drinking writer. You were a writing drinker.
I graduated from college. I was working in publishing. My poetry instructor from college hooked me up with a job at Fair Strauss & Drew, which is one of the old publishing houses. And publishing was less creative than I thought it would be. And I wasn't great. I was in the design department eventually. And I wasn't a fantastic cookbook designer, and I love cookbooks. So I started writing and eventually reached out to Serious Eats, which was young at the time. And they didn't have a beer writer at the time. And I said, I'm from Portland, therefore qualified.
Sure. Yeah, just by proxy, right? Because again, this is 5-6 years ago. They were probably still...
This was in 2009. Yeah, it was
earlier. Wow. Oh, crazy.
And they said, how about every week? That was the interview. I'm from Portland. I like beer. And they said, how about every week?
Wow, that's amazing.
Those were the days in blogging.
Right, and at that time, Portland was still holding the mantle of like most microbrews per capita, mm-hmm. right? I think San Diego has taken it over now. But
so at first I wrote about beer, and then I wrote about wine, and there were lots of great people writing for Serious Eats at the time that I sort of got to know. And after a while, they said, I said, you should really have a drink section. And they said, great, come on and start it. And so at the time, there was just one blog, and we decided to launch this drink section. And Paul Clark of Imbibe was already writing about cocktails for
Cocktail
the site.
Chronicle.
And I brought in a bunch more people. Michael Dietrich wrote Shrubs and Whiskey. So I got to work
from
with
Chicago.
These great cocktail writers, and I learned a lot from them. And I was making the drinks in the office so we could photograph them. And so I was tasting and reading and editing and got really interested in it. And I loved going to bars and interviewing people and talking to people. And I still write about wine. I still write about beer. But I was really having fun with the cocktail stuff. And so eventually I was writing more of those interviews and sort of became the person who did that for the site. And I was there for 6 years or so. And when I left a little while back, it was because lots of things were going on, but one of them was that I wanted to write this book. And it actually was inspired...
Wait, I'm sorry, how long ago did you leave?
A year and a half, 2 years. I'm losing track of time.
Close to 2 years, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I went... How it happened was I met up for drinks with Emily Timberlake, who is an editor at 10 Speed and has edited a lot of great cocktail books. She did the Smuggler's Cove book and Robert Simonson's books, and she's sort of a go-to. And we met up for drinks. I'd never met her before. We ordered a drink I assumed was a punch bowl, but it turned out to be a pineapple with two straws.
Romantic.
So we got very close very quickly. She's amazing. And I thought we would just talk about the books that she edited and how I could write about them. And she said, you know, she was jealous. She was like, I'm jealous of your like web publishing where you can just have an idea and publish it. In book publishing, your idea still has to seem at least a little bit cool 2 years later. And I said, well, you know, they're really not that different. When you look on the backside of a website, you see that the actual traffic is mostly to posts that are old. And your backlist is still valuable. And so the goal is to find stories that you can write that people are going to Google, and stories that are going to be evergreen, and people are going to look for them every year, and sort of things that are going to be useful later, even 2 years later. And she said, like what? And I said, like 10 drinks to make with a bottle of gin and a trip to the grocery store. And she said, that's a book. How quickly can you write it?
Wow.
That's how it happened.
Like just sort of like instant kismet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You just throw a bunch of words out there to people and then you get jobs. It's fucking wild, man.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So I wrote it in 12 weeks.
This book?
Yeah.
Souther, where's your book, man?
Jesus Christ. 12 weeks.
Well, I had a young child at home, so I also was...
Oh, so it slowed you down.
I was on a very tight...
You're going to crank it out in three.
It's very common. People with young children will say, like, well, I knew I had 1 hour to accomplish whatever I needed to accomplish. And so you just do it because you know there's no other time. And so it forces you.
There's no procrastination.
Yeah.
You're just like, it's like, has it happened?
They are out at the playground for 1 hour, find a drink and make it and put it in the book.
And your face. That's changing my opinion about maybe I need a kid.
Probably not.
Souther, you are a kid still.
That's true.
I really like the layout of the book. I mean, like you separated by, you know, the base spirit, which is kind of an obvious way to go, but it's cool. It's just the one bottle, and also the photography also.
Well, the
is
thing it is beautiful. Yeah, it's very bright and color. It looks very. It feels very summery. Well,
it's kind of like festive. Every
bit,
one of them
a
is
bit
like
season defying, maybe.
Yeah, and to me, that's like I was saying before. I like the idea of the one bottle like cocktail because it's kind of like one of those things where like you could like make one of these like with a quick trip to like you said the grocery store and the liquor store and then go to the freaking park and you've got like one bottle and you could actually make the cocktail at the park or on the beach or like when you're camping, you know, in these like festive environments, like having a cookout or whatever.
It lends itself to some easy mobility, whereas half the drinks that you and I produce for our bars would not be so easy to just travel.
But also, there's a lot of... I want to talk about the photography for a second, because
You're a very visual learner.
I am a visual learner.
Kelly Puleo is a goddess.
It's so good. And I'm really drawn to it, because there's so much copper in all these photos.
Oh, yeah, that's your jam.
Yeah, I love copper. There's like golden copper bar tools and like rimmed glasses and shakers and stuff. And it's like, I don't know. I just think that like there's these, like you said, like it's very warm. And when you have like stainless steel or even silver, it kind of like falls cold, you know? And I don't know. That's why, that's another reason why I've been using so much copper lately. It's just, it's warm. And so it's good choices. And also the glassware is stunning as well.
Yeah,
and that's something you can't really do at too many bars. Have like vintage and
unique
glassware.
You know, that's like, I feel like all the photographs in a lot of books that we've been seeing lately have all these beautiful glasses, and I'm so kind of like jealous. Not just for Maury Margo, which is very like,
yeah.
Maury Margo's like tough, and like we have two glasses, and they're made to, you know, you can bounce them on the concrete.
I think it's, yeah, but,
like,
exactly.
I like those. When I went to like Banzibar, oh my God, I fell in love with all the glassware there.
I mean, the cool thing about it is it also translates to who's going, I feel like who's going to be making these drinks. A lot of them can be made at home because of like the accessibility of it.
Yeah.
Like this isn't like when you see like a bar's cocktail book, like we were talking about before, they'll have like photographs of, and I'm guilty of doing it because I love awesome glassware. It's like the Grand Army Instagram account is full of like antique, like crystal glassware and stuff like that. And you come to the bar, you'll get a nice glass, but it's not going to be that.
It's not going to be one of them.
It's not
going to
be one of them.
Those are locked away in the cabinet.
Yeah, exactly. But so this actually translates to something that is very obtainable to the person who's making these drinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. We are at the halfway mark, so we should take a quick break to hear from our sponsors here at Heritage Radio Network, and then we'll come back and we'll keep talking to Maggie Hoffman, and I'm going to make us a drink
from
the book that I made for the book.
Cool.
She brought all the junk for my cocktail. It's on page 65. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Brandon Boy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
And we're back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. In the studio, we have author Maggie Hoffman, and I think Souther's about to... He's doing it.
I'm making us a drink. Sorry, I'm making us a drink.
It's on page 65 of her book, The One Bottle Cocktail. And that's literally what it is, one bottle cocktails with other stuff. Tell us about this cocktail, Souther, won't you? Or Maggie?
Yeah, let's let Maggie talk. It's a show about her, not me.
Well, so I actually think Souther may have been the source of one of the things that I really am proud of in the book, which is...
Oh, well, you're welcome.
He sent me this drink and was like, one of the cool things about this drink is that it's very flexible. It's a really refreshing summery drink with lime, and you throw the whole spent shell in and aloe juice.
Easier cleanup, I think.
Yeah, and it's aloe juice and lime and sparkling water. Aloe juice is at Whole Foods or whatever. And... he made it with tequila, but it turns out it's also awesome with gin, and it's really good with rum. So at the back of every chapter, you can find more drinks to make with another spirit, because at some level, the drinks are like, it's almost like you've made a fresh drink mix, and you can pair a number of different spirits with it.
And then you fortify it.
Yeah, exactly. Pair the thing you like the best. And I was going to mention that before the break, but that's when I said I thought we were getting the cart before the horse. Yeah, at the end of every chapter, there's a blurb that says, what's it say? I don't have the book in my hand.
Bonus drinks.
Bonus drinks, yeah. Where at the end of each, like at the end of the vodka chapter, it says, you know, try some of these vodka drinks that we've listed here, or with other spirits, or the other way around, right? It says
more there are other spirits. Drinks.
Yeah, there are other rum. There are other cocktails in the book that could easily be made with vodka, or there are other cocktails in the book that could easily be made with gin.
And so I had to test them all out, which ended up like multiplying.
Hard work. It's good work if you can get it.
Multiplying the days this whole project took, but so the best swaps are in this bonus drinks chapter. So it gives you, you know, if there's like 8 drinks in the rum chapter and then here's 8 more, it gives you about twice as many drinks to make with that bottle. So you should be getting to the bottom of the bottle by then.
Sure. And then, you know, again, it's inspiration, right? You don't have to be tied down to exactly what the recipe says. Yeah, that's for you. To make it work, you know, this cocktail, as I'm sipping on it right now with our, you know, David and I have promised to build a bar in here, and we've started, but we haven't got it all complete yet. So this is a pretty rudimentary build on this drink. We don't have enough ice. We don't have a tall enough glass, but it's still refreshing and delicious. I didn't measure anything. But this drink could have some other substitutions as well. You know, this would be equally refreshing. We're making it with gin right now, but it could be equally good with tonic instead of with just mm-hmm. seltzer water, or with even, you know, like a Jarritos grapefruit would be great with this aloe and tequila. You know, there's like
The tamarind Jarritos with the aloe bee.
Oh, man.
With the tequila. Dude.
Tamarindo. Yeah, and also I think it's, you know, when you reached out to me, I tried to be like, okay, well, if I've only got one bottle to work with, then I'm going to try and work with at least one ingredient that maybe folks are not reaching for on the regular. So I chose aloe juice, mm-hmm. which is very common where I'm from in Florida. People drink it all the time. But I don't see it a lot on menus, and it's really refreshing. And I feel like I hate those folks who say like, "Oh my God, I'm drinking a healthy cocktail." I don't feel like that, but I do feel like just aloe juice on its own is doing something good on my insides. If the aloe juice on my hands makes my hands feel better, then I'm sure that aloe juice in my stomach is making my stomach feel better.
I used to make alojitos at Burning Man like 10 years ago. And it was like the best thing because it was like mint and aloe and rum. And it was super refreshing, but it was also like, all right, everyone's on drugs. Let's do something healthy for once. Anyway, it is very refreshing.
It is.
Yeah, even just, like I said, even just built with you know, room temperature products and not enough ice. But it's still something we're going to sit here and drink and enjoy while we keep talking
of course.
About this book.
Yeah.
And whatever else you have going on out there in San Francisco, what else is going on?
Well, I'm working on another book that sort of...
And you shocked me when you told me that out there because this is your first book and it's not even out.
It's not even out. You can order it now, though.
That's right.
What?
The second book sort of comes at the challenge of cocktails at home from a different direction. I feel like I'm not a bartender. I'm not pretending to be a bartender. What I do is taste people's drinks.
I am pretending to be a bartender.
You know, I collect people's drinks that I think are awesome and I share them and I try to... you know, give some attention to people who live all over the country and to women bartenders and to just more people that aren't already in all the books. But I think people at home need drinks that make life a little bit easier. And so in this case, it's that you don't have to run around town trying to track down some rare liqueur. And the second book is all pitcher drinks. So you don't have to shake to order. And when you have friends over, it can be already taken care of. Sometimes it's a swing top bottle that you have in your freezer that you can just pour. And so that's the idea. And also maybe you'd buy something special. Maybe you buy a fresh bottle of vermouth if you're going to use half of it. So that's the idea. No one else knows this. That's the first time I've said this to anyone.
Well, we've scooped them.
So that's coming out next year.
Is there a scoop noise, Dave? Dun, dun, dun.
Think about it. We'll get back to you.
We scooped them. that's cool. Did you make? What's the title
timing,
of the book? Yeah, your timing's amazing. The
title's still in progress.
Timing. So
title's still in progress. No, but the book will come out next year. Also from 10th Beat Press.
Amazing. That's like so they have enough faith in you already, even though this book hasn't sold a copy yet.
There have been some signs of interest. Some people are excited about this book.
It should be. It's cool.
It's, you know, it's different. When Jeffrey Morgenthaler did a blurb for it and said, this book puts a culinary cocktail in everyone's hands. And I hadn't really been thinking about it that way. But I think one of the cool things about the book that may not be apparent until you really get in is that there's a lot of savory drinks. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of drinks with celery and cilantro and sort of ingredients that most people at home wouldn't associate with cocktails. Like, this is not a book of spiked lemonade.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's like kind of you go to the refrigerator and it's like stuff that you had that mm-hmm. you were using to
And there's to cook with. A lot of tea because a lot of people are using that for sort of the tannin or the bitterness.
Sure.
To build a drink that tastes like a modern drink. These aren't just spiked juices. The idea is that people have sort of built the cocktail experience without the ingredients. And of course, there were bartenders who basically said, screw you. It's not a cocktail if it's just one bottle.
Oh, the nerds.
The nerds.
The nerds come out of the woods, man.
And I think that's totally fair. And a lot of people don't work with these fresh ingredients behind the bar because, you know, one kiwi could be more sour or sweet than another. Like, that is a danger. But for me, the goal was to find things that could stand in for bitters, whether it's marmalade or tea or whatever. Radicchio, there's a drink with radicchio.
Well, yeah, the other day on the old Facebook, a friend from across the country, well, it's Lindsay, I'm going to say who it is. I was thinking, should I call her out or not? Lindsay Madison, who used to work at Amore Margo, the House of Bitters, yeah. And she was writing that she just made a little self-defacing sort of like post where she said, I have to make punch bowls non-alcoholic for a party. And I was banging my head thinking, I can't even use bitters. And then I realized, I can just use all the spices that are in bitters. You can get around bitters. If you want Angostura, the flavor is cinnamon and cardamom. You don't mm-hmm. have to have the alcohol if you don't want it. Grab mm-hmm. some cinnamon, grab some cardamom, go to town.
And some people at home, like, just aren't quite ready to invest in a bar. When you think about, okay, a 3-bottle cocktail is a deliciously simple cocktail, and at a bar, it's easy to make. Mm-hmm. At home, if you have, maybe you have gin, but you don't have chartreuse, you don't have vermouth, you could be spending some money on that drink.
Yeah.
Right. And I think for the home user, that's an expense that they may not be willing to incur because what if they go out and buy that thing and then they don't like the drink, right? And then it's like, okay, well, I invested $40 in a drink that I don't like.
Just try it at the... Like,
I see what you're about to say, and that's you and me. Like, yeah, I'm like, oh, fuck it, I'll just drink the booze. It doesn't matter, right?
No, I wasn't going to say that.
Oh, okay.
I just think...
I think, I was thinking.
It's kind of veering off, but I think, like, you know, any time that you're going to, like, start building a home bar, it's like you should... Go to the bar first and, like, try things out and see what you like, and then that's when you start pulling in, like, Benedictine and chartreuse and, like, high-ticket mm-hmm. items, you know?
It's high-ticket, like, esoteric, and small usage, yeah, you know what I mean? Like... No one's pounding through a bottle of maraschino, you know, but it's kind of necessary for a lot of cocktails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, but that's here or there. I mean, like, it's kind of like base level stuff. This is like going back to what you were saying about your second book, but also this one. Looking through it, it's all like a lot of fresh ingredients and stuff that I never even thought about that. But it's like you make a good point. It's like there's a lot of stuff that might just be sitting in your refrigerator already that, you know, got delivered from Blue Apron or like whatever, you know, like you picked up at Whole Foods and you're like, why do I have all this cilantro? You always have too much cilantro, by the way. It's like whenever you get
so
a bundle,
cheap. Yeah.
You get a bundle, you get all this motherfucking like cilantro. Leaves. It's like, how much guacamole am I going to make this week? You know, it's like,
right, it's economy of scale.
Or you might have marmalade and oolong tea and then you put it with scotch and it turns out it's delicious.
Like, you're like, oh, wow, I have all this marmalade and I never eat breakfast because I'm a bartender or like whatever it is, you know? Yeah. It's like, you have eggs, you could make some, you know, flips and sours and stuff like that. It's like, it's cool. I never really thought about the refrigerator because I don't really cook at home.
Same. I mean, I think about it, but I don't do it at home. Yeah.
Oh, and like, actually, like you're talking about like kind of like bottled or pitchered, you know, stuff. I was just thinking like, oh, well, we always have batch martinis and Negronis in the refrigerator, but that's what takes up most of the space. And
in your home fridge?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I almost always have
you have strategically placed booze all around your apartment. I mean, you always have Underberg on your nightstand. You have shower truce.
Yes.
You have a bottle of shower truce in your shower.
That's correct.
Yeah. I've never even been over there, but
you're calling me out and I didn't realize it. But yes, and then also there are two things kind of always in my freezer. Not always, but kind of always. I always have a bottle of vodka. People are shocked when they hear that, but I like vodka. But I don't drink it with anything. Vodka for me needs to be in the freezer, so it's rocket cold without any dilution, so I don't need to add any ice.
Yeah.
And I always think of vodka, the mixer, as food. So I'll sip on vodka while I'm eating salt and vinegar potato chips. That's amazing. And then also in my freezer, I always have a martini.
Like a bottled martini?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Or just a pre-made one that's like
in a glass.
In a glass. You just come home and you open your freezer.
They're ready.
You're like, oh, here we go.
It's time for my evening martini. Honey, I'm home. No, it's in a bottle. And then, of course, usually banging around somewhere is a bottle of whiskey. So I feel like I don't have a lot of booze in my house, but I do have all of those things.
Actually, that's...
Right now, I definitely have chartreuse in my shower, Underberg on my nightstand, and martini and vodka in the freezer, and I have a bottle of whiskey that I'm about halfway through.
When I opened my bar, I took all... I had hundreds of bottles. I should be saying this on the air. I'm sure the SLA's not listening, but I took them to my bar.
Why wouldn't you?
And I don't keep
just
booze
it's
around
illegal,
the house.
Who cares?
I don't really keep booze around.
Yeah,
the house.
I don't either. You know,
but I'll have like one bottle at a time, and that's what's
guess
cool
what?
About this.
One
there's
bottle?
A buck for me.
And you know, and I think that if guys like us who have you know imminent access to all those sorts of things are admitting that we don't really keep that much stuff at home, then I have to assume that the typical home user doesn't either. So this book makes more sense for that too. You know, you've got a broad audience that I think is going to really appreciate this book, and I also really think this book is what's the word here? Sequelable. Like, I feel like one bottle cocktails, too.
Scale.
Well, and there are some spirits that aren't in there.
Well, yeah, even...
There's some bartenders that don't have cocktails
I was
in
reading,
there.
I got the book just 2 days ago, and I was reading it yesterday, so I'd have some insight on it before we got in here today. And you mentioned in the beginning, none of the cocktails involve things like vermouth or fortified wines or Amaros. But you can make cocktails that just use a vermouth or a fortified wine or an Amaro. So like there's one bottle cocktails too is definitely something you should consider if this one cracks it out of the park, which I think it will.
Maybe. And the 12 bottle book didn't include tequila because there aren't like historical drinks with tequila. So of course this has a big agave section and there are tequila drinks and mezcal drinks, but it doesn't have Irish whiskey. So that would be another section that we haven't.
So how many of the cocktails in this book are submitted? 100%?
All but one.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which one?
I did a drink with honeydew and cilantro and other herbs. That was just mine. And there was another thing that was a backup, but I didn't need it. I talked to maybe 1,000 bartenders.
What?
And I made
I didn't know
about
there were 1,000 bartenders.
All around the country and no, world. Just kidding. And I made about 250 drinks. And these, you know, it's a jigsaw puzzle of, well, I already have a blueberry drink or I already have a cucumber drink or whatever to try to make a variety come together.
I'm not even that organized. This is why I don't have a book yet. Putting together recipes, I'll be like, but what about that one? And what about that one? And then, like, the whole book would
this
be
is
all
the
just
job
about
of,
the Manhattan. It would be just 100 variations on the Manhattan.
This is the job of the editor.
Yeah.
That guy or girl is going to rein you in.
That's the thing, though. I don't have a boss. In any of my things that I do in life, I don't answer to anyone, really. So, like,
Maverick.
But, like, that's actually, like, what keeps me, like, so unorganized.
Right. I mean, you know, I kind of, you know, I'm sort of in the same boat. And weirdly, like, Carrie Johnson, I know you're probably listening, she's become my boss. It's my assistant that I hired.
Exactly.
Or there's a writer for hire.
She thumbs through my emails and whatnot and then tells me what to do. So you wrote this thing in 12 weeks with a kid. I've been working on my book for like since October.
There's not a lot of writing.
And people are telling me that, okay, not for nothing. That's kind of true. It's a little primer in the beginning and then it's
the main job was finding the best drinks.
Yeah, you made 250 drinks at home in 12 weeks. That's the big hurdle that you overcame.
And then the introduction is just like, here's what to expect.
Drunkenness. what was your husband doing all this time?
He goes to work.
I mean, but did he help? Did he have any influence? Did he have anything to say about the cocktails? Was he like, this other makes a shitty drink?
Sometimes he would taste things later, though. My philosophy for work now, especially, is to do the thing I most need to do first in the day. And so these fresh drinks, all these citrusy drinks, they don't keep, so he would usually not taste them. He's tasting more in the second book because they're batched.
Right on.
Makes sense.
It's like good to have someone to bounce that stuff off of.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My neighbors are good drinkers.
Yeah. I'm sure they love you.
Exactly. They're excited neighbors to have you.
Like, hey, Maggie, write more books.
Whatever. So now you're not working for Serious Eats anymore. You're just freelance writing for all sorts of folks.
Yeah, I'm still writing a little bit for Serious Eats, and some of these recipes will be on there as a preview. And I've done some writing for The Chronicle and for Sever, and who knows what comes next.
Right. And how does that work? Do you pitch stuff to them or they bring it to you? How does that, which direction does that go?
A little bit of both.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of both. And, you know, it depends what people need. And I'm working on a piece right now for Sunset Magazine about wine you can take camping because it's in a can. You know, I do all sorts of stuff.
I love that. I mean, that's
camping wine.
Again, you're speaking to the right audience right here.
There's some great camping ones now, actually. There's some, like, really legit winemakers who are canning.
We always just take bags, like the box bag.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Slap the bag. Slam some rosé.
Sure, right. You take the bag right out of the box because the box is too bulky, and you just slam the thing in your backpack and run a tube.
Yeah, man. Like a, what's it called? Like camel pack or whatever?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Basically, these are better.
And Maggie, I brought it up a couple of weeks ago when we had the team from Shaker and Spoon on the show, where they do their, it's kind of like Blue Apron. You subscribe and each month you get I love that sound. Each month you get a box in the mail that has the ingredients to make 3 different cocktails, 4 times each, so 12 cocktails. And you're only responsible to go out and buy the one bottle that accompanies that box. And I told them that you were coming up on the show, and I was like, you guys should do something together.
Yeah.
They have 4,000 subscribers. They can put a book in every box.
Totally. I am doing a similar thing just in the Bay Area with Good Eggs, which is a grocery delivery that for a while was in New York, too. And they have the best produce that's, like, right from the farm, and they do sell spirits. So they can actually make a full box of the, you know, whichever of these drinks. But it'd be fun to do nationwide because you can deliver produce.
Worldwide. That's the thing. That's why they chose that model, right? They don't have to... If you deliver booze, there's a whole other hurdle of paperwork to go through. Plus, you can't leave it. It has to be signed for, so there's... It's a little bit...
Well, there's also delivering versus shipping.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's crazy.
She's talking about, like, local delivery and they're shipping...
Yeah, understood.
Right. Nationwide.
Right. That's the difference.
Oh, gotcha. Wow, that's cool. Well, what I'm saying, though, is I just feel like there's so many opportunities with this book, and I feel like it's ripe for writing a sequel. Sequel? Is that
let's use it.
Series. A series of one-bottle cocktail books. Well, how long are you out here, and what are you out here for?
Well, I'm out here to hang out at Roberta's and be on podcasts, and... And I'm here for the International Association of Culinary Professionals,
the IACP. I'm familiar with their works.
It's a fun gathering of cookbook authors and editors and an excuse to be in New York City.
I always like to say, when I was an instructor, chef instructor at the New England Culinary Institute for 2 years, the IACP, the International Association of Culinary Professionals, rated New England Culinary as the number one culinary school in America. Coincidence? I don't think so.
Totally.
So I am familiar with their works. I have been lauded by them. You're out here
lauded by everyone.
Yeah,
so
shut up.
I brought you guys some swag.
From IACP?
I love swag.
Some one bottle swag.
Oh, nice. Pins.
There's a Got Whiskey and a Got Gin.
Cool.
And they have the tiniest little hashtag ever.
What's the hashtag? We should know that.
Hashtag the one bottle cocktail.
Cool.
Adorable.
So you can put them on your jean jacket.
I just thought of something.
Which we don't need anymore because it's 70 degrees outside.
Yeah. Oh, they're going on there. But I was just thinking, I love these pins. And, you know, you always have your I Heart Bitters pins. You should do, like, next time when there's the second book, you should do a Shower Truce cocktail. And then I've got Shower Truce.
Love it. I'm totally in. Because I do drink a fair amount of chartreuse in the shower.
Yellow or green?
You know, I think
you go VEP.
I did. I had a,
we did. You in the bottle?
Me in the bottle. Yes. Well, so Natalie, who spends a fair amount of time at my apartment, she saw that I had a bottle of VEP. It was a, it's still in the little wooden box. And I was kind of saving it. Although you've heard me say a thousand times, I'm a consumer, not a collector.
Right.
But there was something about this one that I was kind of saving because it was a gift. And also, it was a 500 mil. Which
I have the same thing.
Unavailable in the United States. We don't do 500 mils here. And also, they don't make it anymore anyway. So I was like, I might hold on to this for a while. She opened it right up, put it in the shower.
Wait, what do you mean they don't make it?
They don't even make it anymore.
VEP?
They make not in the 500 mil.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't make that size bottle.
I was
bottle.
Like, dude, they're not making VEP anymore?
No, obviously they don't make VEP. But they don't make that size bottle anymore. So I was like, I'll hang on to this one for a while.
Was it yellow or green?
And that's what I was about to say also. If you don't say, then it's chartreuse green. It's chartreuse is green. They like saying green.
Yeah.
Right? It's like tuna fish. So if you say chartreuse, you mean...
green.
It's like an ATM default. Machine.
By default, you mean an ATM machine.
Or a cocktail bar. We don't call it a food restaurant.
Right. Or, the, you know, the cars that roll around here, it drives me nuts. All the cop cars in New York say NYPD police.
Yeah.
So the New York Police Department police. So yeah, if you don't say, then it's the green.
Okay.
How did we get on that trail?
Mine's yellow.
I lost my train of thought.
Chartreuse.
Oh yeah. Let's make buns. Yeah. That'd be great. I would love that. I will absolutely make a cocktail that can be built in the shower.
What else did you put in this aloe cocktail? Because we are really trailing off, man.
We are. It's a super simple cocktail. We didn't go over it. I guess we should. We use some gin that I've never seen before. Pretty cool and tasty.
From PM Spirits.
It's called The Street Pumas. London Dry Gin. It's got like a comic book motif on the label.
Yeah. Nicholas Pochi's like really lost his mind lately, and I love it.
Well, I mean... there's part of me that really likes it, but then, you know, there's that one part of me that wants to be an asshole, right? So what do I say about this? I say,
have you had the Mic Drop whiskey?
I don't know that it should have a comic book on the label.
Do you think it's appealing to...
Exactly.
You know what, though? I don't think so. I think, like, a lot of kids these days,
yes,
they're probably too distracted by their phones to be reading comic books, so it actually appeals to more of, like, our age.
You might be right. All right, I'll take that.
It's just for people's parents.
Exactly.
It's got organic aloe juice, and then a half a lime. I literally just squeezed the lime.
Is there any non-organic aloe juice?
Yeah, when I was looking at the label, thinking that same thought. I feel like nobody's out there like mass producing aloe juice with pesticides.
No, there's like a aloe magnate out there like smoking a cigar, twirling his mustache,
with a monocle.
I own you.
And a top hat. And then just a half a lime squeezed, and I throw the shell right into the glass because, again, we're not using any bitters in this book and in these recipes, and there's some bitterness from the pith and the oil that will linger on your tongue a bit, and then in a tall Collins glass with ice with seltzer. Super easy, very refreshing. The aloe juice gives it a kind of a mouth-coating feel, gives it some viscosity and richness, and I think the... in the book, it's in the tequila chapter, right? But
it's called the Sun-Kissed Highball.
But I say we can make it with white rum or
page 65.
White rum or
Intense Speed Press.
one bottle. See, I thought it was one bottle cocktails all this time until I just looked at the cover closely and saw the one bottle cocktail by Maggie Hoffman. Maggie, do you have some social media you want to plug? Where can we follow your antics?
Maggie J. Hoffman at everywhere. Maggie J. Hoffman on Instagram, Maggie J. Hoffman on Twitter, and the one bottle cocktail is the hashtag. I'm on there. Follow it.
Cool.
Red.
Already have action.
Are you still blogging? Do you have a blog site you want to? No. Blogging is dead.
I have a website, but blogging is dead. Buy the book. That's where I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course everyone's going to buy the book. If you're going to rush out right now, you can get it at... on March 3rd, you said?
March
6th. 6th, sorry.
You can pre-order now on Amazon. I think pre-order it'll be now. In your mailbox on March 6th if you
That's
do
it how
now.
It works. Mine has that little button, too. Pre-order it on Amazon or pick it up at your favorite retailer. And then are you going to plan on doing any kind of a little book tour, or is that in the works? What are you thinking?
There will be some events in the Bay Area, so if you're a local, hit me up. And otherwise, I'm mostly... hoping to be plugging it on, you know, better podcasts and television shows, and that's
better than
thing.
This one.
I'll be around.
Cool.
Rad. Well, it's been really a treat for us to have you on. Thanks for coming all the way over from San Francisco.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to be there next week. Are you going to be around?
Yeah.
Let's get a drink.
Excellent.
All right.
Cool. I'm pulling up my calendar.
I was going to say, chartreuse. Have you been to drink chartreuse at the Morris?
Not yet.
It's pretty awesome.
All right. It's been on my
list. He also has great Madeira and donuts. Madeira and donuts go together.
They sure as shit do.
Wait, what's the Morris?
It's in the Mission, and Paul Einbund has this amazing collection of chartreuse not to drink in the shower.
I mean, why do you got to put rules on
that? The thing I say to people when they ask me about it all the time is like, it's like a spa day every day. You know, just one little sip. I'm not in there getting wasted sometimes. But like in the summer when I'm taking a cold shower, a nip of chartreuse in the shower is amazing. In the winter when I'm taking a really hot shower, a nip of chartreuse, like it's great.
You've got like your mug of chartreuse hot chocolate.
Yes.
Like in the shower. Uh-huh. I just imagine you in the shower, and I
don't imagine really, that.
I can't let see it now. All right. Well, great show, y'all.
Yes, show's coming up. Show's coming up in the near future in no particular order. Rob Morton's going to be here from Critical Mass to talk to us about making cocktails on incredibly grand scales. Mm-hmm. We've got the team from Attaboy. Sam Ross is going to come in here and talk to us about all the crazy things that he's doing kind of all over now. He's in L.A., Nashville. He's got two places here in New York. And then...
Got Rob Dietrich from
Rob
Strain
Dietrich
Hands.
Coming up. So lots of great episodes still on the horizon. Oh, A.K. Hatta and Jeff Bell are going to come in and talk to us about their new bar in Hong Kong.
What?
Yes.
He didn't tell me about that. That's great.
Gonna get those guys. I was actually
like
two
of the most beautiful people in the world.
I know, right?
Opening a bar.
Two of the most beautiful ladies I've ever had the pleasure to work with. Jeff Bell is the prettiest woman in the bar business. When they do the movie, Angelina Jolie is gonna play him. So he's just opened. He's a partner in the new PDT that's in Hong Kong, and he's super excited. And well, he should be. And he's been over there for several weeks. And AK is over there now. And I'd actually reached out to AK. I didn't even reach out to Jeff to say, "Hey, AK, you should come and do the show." And she's like, "Yeah, when I get back." And I was like, "Okay, cool." And then I was randomly talking to Jeff the other day because he's in town, and I was like, "I'm gonna have AK on." I was like, "Actually, you should come too." So we'll get them both in here at the same time. It'd be fun. Anyway, yeah. Lots of cool shows coming up with lots of our friends and heroes, which is what we always do here, which is why I so enjoy this gig.
Heck yeah.
All right. That's all I got.
It's been a great show today. Thanks again for coming on the show, Maggie. Love the book. Can't wait for it to come out. And again, it's beautiful. I love the idea. I can't wait to... Like, I know it's not even out yet, but I'm really looking forward to your second book and your third book and so on and so on.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. So I guess that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Tune in to Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Click on the Beating Heart to donate to our station, our fair station. And also, if you feel like bringing a bottle by for the our little bar that we're building in the corner.
Oh, what a great idea. Anybody out there who wants to just pop by, we're always here on Wednesdays. We typically arrive around 1 o'clock and have some lunch before we go live on the air at 2 o'clock. You could certainly stop by and donate a bottle to our burgeoning bar. You could say hello to Dave Tatasciore, our producer, who's always keeping us in the Foley arts these days.
That's me.
Yeah, man.
On that note.
Yes.
Have a great week, everyone, and cheers.
Cheers, guys.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Ever wonder what kind of podcast Julia Child would have made? Probably would have been one where she introduced you to all of her latest discoveries and favorite people. And that's exactly the tradition we're following on Inside Julia's Kitchen, the podcast of the Julia Child Foundation for Gastronomy and the Culinary Arts. Join me, Todd Shulkin, your host, and the Foundation's Executive Director, as I bring you inside the Foundation's world to meet the bright lights of today's food universe, just as Julia used to do from her own famous kitchen. New episodes air on Heritage Radio Network Wednesdays at noon Eastern. Listen in.